from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, California Assemblymember Mike Gatto introduced legislation last week that would put a proposal on the November ballot to shut down the California Public Utilities Commission by 2018 and allocate its functions to other agencies. The commission has come under increasing fire for oversight failures following a 2010 San Bruno pipeline explosion, the 2012 closure of the San Onofre nuclear plant, and the ongoing natural gas leak at Porter Ranch. We'll look at this latest proposal and past attempts to reform the CPUC and what may change about the industries it regulates. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. California lawmakers, led by Democratic Assemblymember Mike Gatto of Los Angeles, are proposing a ballot measure that would allow the California legislature to create a new regulatory agency to replace the scandal-plagued California Public Utilities Commission. Voters would decide on an initiative to repeal the constitutional mandate and authority of the CPUC, which presently regulates privately owned electric, natural gas, telecommunications, water, railroad, rail transit, and passenger transportation companies, and is charged with providing safe, reliable service at reasonable rates. In this morning's opening forum hour, we discuss Assemblyman Gatto's proposed ballot measure, as well as other proposals for reforming the CPUC, and we'll talk about the past, present, and future of the PUC. Joining us, first of all, from Los Angeles is Assemblymember Mike Gatto, who is Democratic Assemblyman from Los Angeles. And Mike Gatto, good to have you with us on Forum. Welcome.
Oh, it's always great to be here.
I guess the place to begin is just by describing why it's important to remove these PUC provisions from the state constitution and give it back to the legislature to figure out what to do.
Well, I think you start with some questions about ideals. And the first one is, you know, if we were constituting a regulatory agency in the year 2016, would we create the CPUC? And I think the answer to that is clearly no. We would not place regulation for gas lines and electric utilities and water and railroads and Uber and Lyft and hot air balloons. We would not place that all in one agency's hands. It would be too big of a mandate. It would be too unwieldy. And I think we'd suffer from a lack of specialization. And then the second question that you have to ask is also one of ideals, and that is, has the CPUC served the public well in the last decade? And the answer to that, again, is no. You know, people in Orange County are worried about San Onofre. People in the Central Valley are worried about oil trains. People in the Bay Area about pipeline explosions. And, of course, people in Los Angeles about gas leaks. So there's nobody quite happy with the CPUC now.
And there have been ongoing scandals, of course, as well. How much of that is behind your attempt to really change things?
Well, I think there's a lot, because when you have leaner, more efficient agencies, you have greater accountability. And I know a lot of people are disappointed that there haven't been broad changes as a result of the issues that have come forward with the CPUC. But if you had leaner, smaller, more focused agencies, and they did something wrong, there would be greater accountability.
There have been a number of bills that have tried to reform the agency. We'll talk about that with Marisa Lagos, who's been following the story for KQED. But Governor Brown has vetoed them, and how much has that played into what you're proposing here?
Well, you know, I supported those measures, and, you know, I voted for all of the reforms last year and the year before. And, you know, I was disappointed that the governor vetoed them, but We're both big boys, and sometimes we have differences of opinion, and that's just the way it goes. But this is really standing by itself. I mean, you know, if you examine the issue, it's very hard to conclude anything. But you know, it's time to start over again. Piecemeal reforms might not be the best way to go. I think here, it's clear that we need to rethink the way we regulate utilities in the state.
What about the argument, though, the PUC is on is actually in the state constitution because it's supposed to be an independent agency?
Well, that's one of the greater ironies of California politics. You know, just similar to the way that the initiative process was created to free California special interests, and now it has become a tool exclusively of special interests. You know, the PUC was put in the Constitution to get rid of the legislature's deference to railroads. And now, you know, you have this ironic turn of events where many people argue that the CPUC is itself beholden to the very entities that it regulates. And so, you know, I'm not proposing we get rid of regulations at all. I mean, I've always supported consumer protections, you know, in every aspect that the CPC regulates. But I think we need different types of regulators, and I think we need more focused, more specific, more specialized regulators.
And what do you envision in the place, or at this point, you're just going to go to the drawing boards and give us a sense of the timeline, if you would?
Well, there's a similar ballot initiative that's probably coming to the ballot that has to do with campaign finance reform. And we actually modeled ours after this one. The campaign finance reform says we're going to repeal the section of the California Constitution that forbids public financing of elections. And the legislature has to come up with a public financing program for elections within a couple years. That's the same thing we're doing here. We're saying that the CPUC's constitutional protections are stripped, that their ability to occupy the field in all of these different entities, all of these different worlds that we talked about at the beginning of the show, is gone. And the legislature has to reconstitute its regulatory authorities by 2018.
Again, Assemblyman Mike Gatto with us from L.A., Democratic Assemblyman from Los Angeles, who is essentially proposing a pretty radical overhaul of the California Public Utilities Commission, proposed by Assemblyman Gatto and other state lawmakers. And Assemblyman, good to have you with us. Thanks for joining
us.
Always
great to be here.
Let me tell you who else is joining us for the hour. Marisa Lagos, as I alluded to before, is here in studio with us. She is a reporter for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. Welcome, Marisa.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Also say good morning to Mike Toney, who's here in studio, Executive Director for TURN, the Utility Reform Network. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
And good morning also to Steve Weissman, who's here, lecturer at the Goldman School of Public Policy at UC Berkeley and former director of Berkeley Law's Energy Program. He's also a former administrative law judge for the CPUC and a policy and legal advisor to three PUC commissioners. And we should add directed the commission's initial investigation into the failure of deregulated California electricity markets back in 2000-2001. Stephen Weissman, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
And I should mention that we invited the CPUC, and they declined. We also invited Governor Brown's office, and they declined. And, Marisa, let's get right to Governor Brown's vetoes. There were at least six bills that he vetoed.
That's right. And as the Assemblyman alluded to, they were overwhelmingly, in fact, unanimously, in almost all cases, supported in the legislature. It's not the first time these types of bills have been vetoed by the governor, but this was, I think, the biggest package. And essentially at their core, it's very complicated because the CPUC and the way it does business is very complicated. But they were really to expand transparency. A lot of them dealt with limiting private conversations between PUC commissioners and the utilities and interested parties that they regulate. There's been a lot of questions over the sort of appropriateness of those communications, both after the San Bruno explosion in 2010, which killed eight people, and around the decommissioning of the San Onofre nuclear power plant. And so there was also, you know, legislation that looked at sort of how, and some of it's been revived, and Mark can talk about that in more detail, but, you know, how the administrative law judges are treated, what sort of standards the commissioners and staff and judges are held to. And in his veto messages, the governor essentially said that he had, you know, he and the commission supported the basic idea behind the reforms, but they had some problems with the way that they were written. You know, as somebody who watches the legislature, I think that's a little disingenuous, considering this was a public process that took place over a year. The governor could have involved himself way sooner. And he promised that they would come back in January and fix this. And so far, we're not really seeing, I think, that movement. There have been two of these bills reintroduced in the Senate. They sailed through the Senate again. But I'm not hearing that there's really any agreement between CPUC President Michael Picker, who's been very involved with this, and the governor and those lawmakers.
On the other hand, Senator Jerry Hill, local senator here in Northern California, who wrote one of those reform bills, said he was optimistic that Governor Brown would work with the legislature. However, and I want to get your take on this, you mentioned Michael Picker. When he was appointed last December and soon thereafter, there was a great deal of enthusiasm about reform. And now there's a great deal of criticism. I mean, that simply seems to have been the trajectory. And the governor has pretty much stood behind him and has also been criticized for standing behind Michael Peavy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to separate the two directors because Michael Peavy is involved in some criminal investigations around that San Onofre situation. And I think was seen as having a much cozier relationship with the utilities.
Let me just actually comment on that. He was a former CPUC head, led the panel for 12 years and left in December 2014 under a cloud. He had been a target of both state and federal investigation in a possible interference, peddling stemming from the deals he allegedly made with utilities.
Yeah, and to be fair, the Governor Brown did not appoint Mr. Peavy, but he did stand by him during a lot of, you know, these scandals. And I think that gets to this sort of quasi-independent nature of, you know, that it's hard to unravel how much is the governor involved and how much is he not. These are his appointments. It is an independent agency, but it does seem, as Gatto alluded to, that there's been more questions over sort of political involvement or maybe that there should be more political involvement in some cases. So, yes, I think Mr. Picker was seen as a breath of fresh air. Everyone I spoke to for a story that we did last year, after these vetoes, kind of looking at what's the future here, what's going to happen. Even some of the CPUC's harshest critics and the governor's harshest critics expressed optimism that, you know, Michael Picker was going to lead things in the right direction. And I do think it still remains to be seen. And that's why I think it's important to separate these reform proposals, which are, you know, trying to work within the current system, from what Assemblymember Gatto and others are proposing, which is to sort of blow up the current system and really start from scratch.
What about somebody like Jamie Court from Consumer Watchdog, who says Jerry Brown wants to take public out of PUC?
Well, you know, a lot of these reform proposals from last year were aimed around shedding more light and sunshine into the inner workings of the way, you know, decisions are made that affect all of us. So our energy and utility bills, railroad safety, you know, most of, I think, the controversies have really focused around gas and electric companies and their behavior and that sort of thing. But as Mr. Gatto alluded to, this is a very huge agency with a huge mandate that oversees, you know, industries that didn't exist 10 years ago, like Lyft and Uber and other ones, which have obviously been around since the beginning, like the railroad, which is how the CPUC started.
Marisa Lagos here in studio, reporter for KQED's California Politics and Government Desk. And Mark Toney is also here in studio with us. He's the executive director of TURN, the Utility Reform Network. And Mark, kind of frustrated with the governor's vetoes, I imagine, aren't you?
Absolutely. The governor has proclaimed that he's concerned about the CPUC and yet vetoed every single bill that came to his desk last year, all six of them. So no wonder the legislature is frustrated. No wonder Assemblymember Gatto has introduced what is, quite frankly, a nuclear option. What he's done, which is successful, is put the issue of CPUC reform front and center, and it's clearly sending a message to the governor that the legislature wants CPUC reform one way or the other.
So you'd like to see this come into fruition, or would you like to see preferably maybe just some serious reform of the CPUC?
We support the CPUC's mission of safe, reliable, affordable service. And we need the CPUC. CPUC is the only thing that stands between the profit motives of the utility companies and the consumers who have to pay their bills month to month. We need a strong PUC. That's why we're supporting SB 215, introduced by Senator Mark Leno of San Francisco, because 215 would stop the backroom meetings, the secret meetings between utility companies and the CPUC staff. That is how the CPUC gets captured by industry, is because of these secret meetings. We want to put a stop to it so the CPUC can operate as an independent agency and put the public's interest first.
Talk about the public interest, could you, for a moment, for people who might not necessarily be paying a lot of attention to the CPUC and what it does. Why should the public care about CPUC reform?
Because the CPUC's decisions hit people's pocketbooks on a month-to-month basis. Every person who pays a telephone bill, a gas bill, an electricity bill, in some cases water bills, is impacted by the decisions that the CPUC makes every day. Right now, the CPUC is considering a $2.5 billion rate increase proposal by PG&E. And
which would mean a 2.5% increase for consumers.
Right? It would actually be a 17% increase. $2.5 billion would equal a 17% right. increase. And that in this day and age where a lot of people are still struggling to make ends meet, every dollar counts. $144 more a year makes a lot of difference to a lot of people.
Let me get those figures straight. It's $2.5 billion, but it's 17% in terms of the increase. And we don't necessarily know where that money's going. I mean, part of the problem we're talking about here is transparency.
The issue is to make sure that people know what's happening at the CPUC, that the decisions are made in a fair manner, and that all the parties like TURN and other parties who represent consumers, we get a fair shake, that there's due process, that the utility companies don't get extra special meetings that people don't hear about, that influence the commissioners, and we don't have a chance to respond. That's what the issue is. When you have a court proceeding and everybody sees what everybody else is introducing and everybody gets a chance to respond, it's a more fair system. When one side gets to provide one-sided information that no one else gets to see, that's what the problem is. That's what 215 is designed to stop.
Again, Mark Toney is executive director of TURN, the Utility Reform Network. Did I see something in a TURN report about literally 700,000 children or so deprived of utilities last year? 700,000 including children, excuse me.
Sure. In 2014, there were 714,000 households whose utility service was cut off because they couldn't pay their bills. 700,000 households equals 2 million people, mostly children, deprived of basic lights and heat because they couldn't afford the bills. That's why we need a strong PUC to put a stop to that. That's why we need to stop these outrageous rate increases.
And let me bring Steve Weissman into this again, who is a former administrative law judge for the CPUC. You're not entirely on board with Assemblyman Gatto here, are you?
Well, I'm certainly on board with the spirit of what he's trying to accomplish. This is an agency that clearly is in need of reform, if not broad-scale restructuring. The challenge is as follows. As Assemblyman Gatto did acknowledge, this is supposed to be an independent agency. This is an agency created as a result of reform movement to get the rate setting process and the influence that comes along with being a railroad or being a utility away from the legislature. They even required that the commission have its headquarters in San Francisco just to get it out of Sacramento. So with the measure as it's currently being described, the result is going to be to put the PUC and everything it does firmly back within the legislature,
which is influenced by lobbyists to a great degree.
The highest spending lobbyists in the state tend to be the utilities.
So what kind of reforms would you imagine would be appropriate or the most viable reform?
I guess there are a couple of directions here. One would have to deal with the way the commission does its business internally. The issue of private communications has been controversial in the papers a lot in recent months. I was a co-author of a report along with Deborah Bayless from Golden Gate Law School where we looked at the rules and processes for private communications in other agencies like the California PUC around the country. And what we found was that the California PUC it's divided.
It's sui generis, as we say.
That's right.
There's nothing like it anywhere, is it?
No. If you look at the template for most commissions like this around the country, either state agencies or even the federal regulators, they tend to recognize the need to prohibit communications between decision makers and stakeholders when there's a substantive issue at stake. California doesn't see it that way. There have been efforts in the legislature in the past prior to these bills to try to put greater restrictions on those kind of communications, and it's been very hard to get that passed. And the result is that you have all sorts of formal processes. You have hearings. You have briefs. You have people sworn in. And yet after the record is accumulated, then you still have these private conversations going on that wind up having an inordinate amount of influence. We're human beings, and the communications we have one-on-one are going to have a big influence on the way we think about
it. And that's, of course, one of the biggest issues here. But we're getting close to home in terms of what happened in San Bruno. I mean, pipeline transmission system in many people's minds is still not safe.
Well, if you think about what we're dealing with here, it's something that's thousands of miles worth of distribution and transmission lines that are almost exclusively buried. Most of them were buried before we decided where to put homes and businesses. And so we have a recipe here for a lack of public understanding of the risks that might be at play, and also for difficulty in tracking the welfare of that system. It's not particularly easy to inspect pipes if they're under somebody's house or under their front lawn. And so there's a natural challenge there. It doesn't mean you give up, but it does mean that you have to be particularly careful in terms of keeping records and tracking the vintage of these things and in undertaking regular inspections when you can.
And speaking of natural, Marisa Lagos, let me go back to you because we still have some natural gas that's spewing out of Porto Ranch.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to why, you know, I'm not entirely convinced that Assemblymember Gatto is going to be able to get this out of the legislature with a 2/3 vote. I think especially if the PUC and the governor push back, we have a new assembly speaker coming in. He may not want to, you know, first thing out of the gate, pick a huge fight with the governor like that. But I do think that there's anger and acknowledgement of this problem amongst the public more so than you would think about, you know, as I said, a relatively sort of obscure, complicated agency. Because things like Porto Ranch, San Bruno, San Onofre have happened up and down the state, and they've been in the news, and they've affected so many different communities. And yeah, there's questions being raised right now about did the CPUC adequately respond to this when they were warned 2 years ago about the potential for this corrosion? Did they drag their feet? There was some documents released last week showing they essentially took a few days after they knew it was leaking to even get out there. And so, you know, there's definitely a lot of people who are affected by this directly and a lot of people who I think are fearful that they could be affected beyond the issue, of course, of paying our bills and seeing those rates. I agree that there's this sort of irony in the fact that this commission is seen as being hijacked because it is supposed to be independent. And it's and a lot of the bills from the legislature, to Steve's point, were to bring it back kind of closer to home to state government. They were saying, you guys need to meet in Sacramento once in a while so we can keep an eye on what you're doing, which, again, was not the point at the beginning. I mean, I think it shows this need for balance and the balance of powers because, you know, the legislature has a role, an oversight role, and the governor has an executive function. And it seems to some extent that either because nobody was paying attention or because, you know, the PUC ran wild, you can kind of decide that for yourself, but that balance was perverted a little bit in recent years.
And again, to remind you, our listeners, we did invite the PUC to join us this morning. They declined. We also invited the governor's office, and they declined, and we invite you. So don't decline. Join us if you have something to say here. We welcome your phone calls and your emails. You can join us by phone at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. And you can call us now and let us know your thoughts or any questions you might have. Again, we're talking about a radical overhaul of the CPUC proposed by state lawmakers. You can also email us, our email address, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The California Assembly, legislators in the California Assembly, led by Mike Gatto of L.A., whom we spoke to earlier, introduced legislation just last week that would put a proposal on the November ballot to shut down the California Public Utilities Commission by the year 2018 and allocate its functions to other agencies. And the commission has certainly come under a lot of fire for oversight failures following the 2010 San Bruno pipeline explosion, the 2012 closure of the San Onofre nuclear plant, and the ongoing natural gas leak at Porto Ranch. We're looking at the proposal and looking at the CPUC, and we're certainly asking you what you think about reform in the CPUC, and if the CPUC should be reformed, how should it be reformed, and should it, for that matter, be taken apart. We invited the CPUC. They declined. We invited the governor's office, and they declined. But we have with us here in studio Mark Toney of TURN, executive director of the Utility Reform Network, Steve Weissman, who is a lecturer at the Goldman School of Public Policy and a former administrative law judge for the CPUC and legal advisor to three PUC commissioners. And we also have Marisa Lagos, our own Marisa Lagos, who's a reporter for the KQED California Politics and Government Desk and nursing a frog-ridden throat to hear. Let me look at a tweet here, actually, because we've been asking about suggestions. And here's Omar, one of our listeners, who says, talk to the CPUC employees who want improvements. Also, regionalize some elements akin to water quality boards. Shift some safety functions to OSHA and DMV. Allow counties to pass stricter rules if the CPUC isn't acting fast enough. And again, we welcome your suggestions. And here's just a comment from Dan in an email that I want to get here before I go to your calls. Dan writes, going back to the post-Nixon reforms in Washington, I think we've seen that more open government doesn't necessarily result in the right type of governance. Sometimes seeing the sausage made is not in the public interest. All right, let me get the we did talk, in fact, just yesterday about the Coastal Commission, which is also a regulation agency. And what do you think about this idea? Let me go to you, Steve Weissman. You're the public policy guy. Too much open government can be a danger, a peril?
I don't see that being the issue. In fact, the issue is not enough open government. The PUC specifically is an extremely powerful agency. It's almost impossible to overturn a decision that the Public Utilities Commission issues. You have to go to convince a court of appeals or the Supreme Court to even hear the case. In most cases, they're going to want to defer to the regulatory agency. So what that leaves you with, the only protection you really have is having sunshine and having due process so that people have an equal opportunity to be heard and so that we can have a clear understanding of really what the factors were that went into the ultimate decision was made. Without that public accountability, there's not much you can do.
Well, let me give you an example of that, because there's a court case playing out right
Marisa
now
Lagos.
In which, over the San Onofre decision, some parties took the CPUC to court and said, we want to see the emails between the communications between CPUC president and staff and the governor's office. And, you know, they're you can claim executive privilege and other things, but what the crux of the case is right now is this argument over whether the court even has the authority to oversee this case, because right now the way the law is written, essentially any challenge of a CPUC ruling on this type of thing goes straight to an appeals court, which is, you know, can kind of turn down review without even having a court case. And so I think we're seeing that like play out in real time right now, where there's this issue of it's not even, you know, to challenge to say that you guys should reverse, you know, a decision on how you've governed. It's just to say, how did you reach that decision? The public wants to know, and we're being told we have no right. As a reporter, I'm clearly on the side of sunshine. So.
Yeah, and I would assume, Mark, Tony, as head of Turin, you're on the side of sunshine, too.
Absolutely. Look at how much good has come out of revealing the emails and how much more information we have over the communications between commissioners and between utility companies.
Still trying to get emails too, aren't you?
Yes. But to be able to see that in a year's course of time that utilities communicate hundreds of times with CPUC staff, that's what we're looking to stop. That's what SB 215 would stop, those type of communications.
And just a quick question before we go to calls here, Marisa Lagos. The Office of Ratepayers Advocates, are they still without a leader?
Yeah, we haven't seen a permanent head, I think.
They have a leader. Linda Sarazawa is their acting
Interim, though.
Yeah, but there's been an acting head since 2010, essentially, before Sam Bruno. And right. I was going to bring that up when you read that first comment. You know, we, in our reporting at KQED, spoke extensively with folks who worked at or have worked at the Office of Ratepayer Advocates, which is the sort of branch of the CPUC that does exactly what its name suggests. It's supposed to advocate for all of us who are paying. And there is a lot of unhappiness there. You know, it's always hard because everybody has a different experience within any job. And I think that some of their critiques, you know, there was good rebuttals to some of the critiques that brought up. But I do think that the overall feeling of low morale and the sense that, you know, there's a lot of public servants who have worked on both sides of the CPUC that are being attacked and feel that, you know, their hard work is not necessarily being reflected in the way that the commission has comported itself is a real problem. And I think it's a real problem long term because it makes it harder to attract talent. And you need talent in an agency that's dealing with issues and problems this big.
And we'll go to our callers. And let's go first to Jerry. Jerry, join us. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I have two questions or points to make. One is, as a ratepayer, I was appalled that to come to find out under Michael Peavy that the administrative law judge process, PG&E was able to cherry pick those overseeing and imposing the fine. And the other issue is with regard to Mr. Pickler's predicament right now, in terms of understanding that no fine is too big for PG&E. And Mr. Wiseman, I'd like to hear your comment on that. Thank you.
Yeah, Stephen Wiseman.
So, in terms of the judge shopping, I think, now here's a situation where there's an explicit rule that says you can't have a communication. A stakeholder can't talk to a decision maker and say, you know, we don't like the administrative judge you've assigned to a case. Pick somebody else. That, I think it's, I'd hazard a guess that that doesn't happen directly very often. But on the other hand, there certainly is an understanding of what kind of judge selection could make some parties happy and other parties happy. And so it's always a bit of a balancing act. What happened in the instance that the Jerry is referring to was in so much of a promise from one or two commissioners that they would do their best to take care of a utility's concern about the judges assigned to a case. That's not an even-handed way to do things, and I think pretty much everybody recognizes that.
Well, let me thank Jerry for the call. I want to get as many of you on here as I can, and let me go to Livermore next and welcome Ann. Ann, you're on forum. Good morning.
Thank you. I'd like to know, since PG&E is a publicly held company, why the cost of repairs and liabilities are not taken out of the stockholders' dividends.
All right.
Why does it fall on the ratepayer?
Fair enough question. Mark Tony, can I go to you?
That was what was so important about the CPUC decision on San Bruno. They made the shareholders pay $1.4 billion for fines, penalties, and repairs. And that was very unprecedented, but it was the type of stuff that Tern and other groups fought very hard for. It was simply not fair to make ratepayers pay, and that's our same position with Porter Ranch gas leak, that the shareholders need to pay to relocate those thousands of people and to fix the leak, not the ratepayers.
And I want to bring on another caller, and that caller happens to be a not infrequent forum guest through the years, Severin Borenstein, calling us, UC Berkeley professor. Good morning, Professor Borenstein.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, I wanted to throw one other thing into the discussion this morning. The reform might make sense and the reorganization, but a root problem at the CPUC is the fact that the salaries are very low and the turnover of people is very high. I teach a course in energy and environmental markets to graduate students at UC Berkeley, many of whom consider going to work for the CPUC. And then they see the salaries and say they just can't live in the Bay Area on those salaries. Or they go for a couple of years, develop a lot of expertise, and then either go for work for a utility or for a consulting firm, or even down the street to the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, where they pay substantially higher wages.
Do you know the range of the salaries at the CPUC, Severin?
I don't off the top of my head.
You just know they're low.
From a few years ago, yeah. but they were shockingly low compared to the opportunities that other opportunities that students coming out of, for instance, the public policy school here at Berkeley would have.
All right. I thank you for that. In fact, talk about root problems. Let me look at read an email to you from Rob, who writes, I worked at the CPUC for 20 years, leaving in 2004. The dirty little secret, which is not discussed in the press at all, is that the CPUC cannot possibly effectively do every job assigned to it by statute. There are simply too many jobs and too few staff. To take an example, with the five staff people who cover gas pipeline safety, the CPUC could not possibly monitor every utility installation of underground pipe or maintain its own independent database of the pipes in the ground. CPUC can only audit the efforts of the utilities. Yet the public thinks and expects that the CPUC will be there when all the pipes are installed. I think we're onto something here, Marisa. I mean, low salaries, not enough personnel.
Yeah, and I think, you know, too, this idea of, are they doing too much? I mean, Gatto had a great line when he introduced this with, they're the opposite of too big to fail. They're too big to succeed. And so, you know, I think when you combine that, I mean, it's not unusual to hear that we don't pay enough for government jobs. So that may not be unique to the CPUC. But again, a lot of the people that work there or applying to work there are highly specialized, you know, analysts and others who probably could make a lot more money elsewhere.
Steve Weissman.
There are a lot of wonderful, really smart, very talented people working at the California Public Utilities Commission. There's a finite number of them. There is always competition for the better people between one discipline or another, who's going to work on energy cases, who's going to work on small water companies. And what that does, it leaves the agency in a position where it's always setting its own priorities. And a lot of the concerns and complaints that have come up certainly around safety have been about whether or not safety has traditionally been made a high enough priority. If this agency is going to continue to have a major safety role, then I think there has to be probably more of a public understanding of how those priorities are being set internally and where the people are being assigned.
Which speaks not just to the commission, I think, but, you know, I think anybody who's worked at a larger organization knows that priorities come from the top down, but they also come from the bottom up. And so there's a culture issue if we're talking about safety and what's being prioritized and whether people are overstretched, that I think, you know, most of the legislation and reform efforts have really focused on the commission itself, and understandably. But I think there's valid questions about whether the governor and others should be more involved in really looking at the staffing. Again, we heard that at the Office of Ratepayer Advocates, that people were just so stretched so thin that it was hard to do their job well.
Here's a comment, and Mark Tony, I'd like to go to you and get your responses, from Ivan, a listener, who says, I find this a silly conversation that misses the point completely. If we all agree we need regulation to protect the public from greedy private interests, maybe we should make our public utilities publicly owned. The idea that government can't run efficiently is an archaic and dumb idea. Bureaucratic problems can usually be traced back to private interests meddling and sabotaging. We need to learn to keep money out of politics and government.
It would be great to be able to have the utilities be public. Right now, because of the system we live in, that's not going to happen. What needs to happen is that the legislature needs to understand that any regulatory body needs the resources necessary to do its job. The legislature needs to do a better job in making sure that the PUC has the budget it needs, the staff it needs to carry out the mandates it expects it to do. Even if you reorganize the CPUC and put it in other agencies, they will still need the resources.
And we need more of our calls, so let me go to them. We'll go to John. John, join us. You're on forum.
Good morning, Michael and guests. I've had a small case before the PUC as well as other state agencies, and I would like to suggest that the problem is not just at the commission level but also at the staff level. In most of my cases, I get jerked around big time before I can possibly get a reasonable decision on whatever I'm presenting. I get the impression is because the staff have chummy relationships with the agencies that they're regulating, and they don't take into consideration just the individual consumers' problems. So I have a suggestion that I'd like to get your guests' reaction to, and that is that the legislature established testers to call as if they are consumers and find out exactly what's happening on the ground level.
All right, Steve Weissman, what do you think of that as a reform?
Well, I think that there's an underlying issue here, and that's a matter of being able to establish public trust. And I think it's part of what the decision makers themselves are facing, and the rest of the staff is facing as well. In the public sector, if you have to say, look, trust me, I'll make good judgments, then you know you're in trouble, because you have to have the ability to establish confidence in the public that things are being done in a square way. The caller, John, says that he suspects that a lot of the staff are in the pockets of the regulated entities. Well, that kind of perception is always going to exist as long as there's not a clear open window to see what's going on. And so I think that's really the underlying concern.
So that's why we get back to transparency and accountability. I mean, is really key. And Marisa, you wanted to add something here?
You know, just that I think that sort of echoes the broader concerns we've heard on probably far bigger cases from Turn and other consumer advocates. You know, and to be fair, Turn's in the room. They know their way around this commission. They have, you know, been involved in a lot of what's the exact terminology for how you guys are interveners in a lot of cases, right? So, but I think that, yeah, this issue of public trust. And again, this is why I think the Gatto proposal is so fascinating from a political perspective, is that it does start a conversation about sort of a broader rethinking of the way that we do this in California, and one that I suspect there would be some, at least some public appetite for. And so, you know, whether that will come to fruition or whether it can be used to sort of push the governor and others towards, you know, maybe milder reforms remains to be seen. But I think it'll be interesting to see really how the legislature itself handles this. I was talking to Senator Mark Leno, who, as we know, has authored some of these reforms and has been very vocal about this issue. And I said to him, you know, how come when you have unanimous votes in both houses, which is not something we see often, especially on this, you know, wildly bipartisan manner, there hasn't been more of a concerted effort by lawmakers to really stand up and say, like they have with other issues like immigration or healthcare, this is our priority as the legislature, as a branch of government. We want to do this. And he kind of went, that's a good question, you know.
So well, the politics also plays into what we've heard about Democratic lawmakers essentially not necessarily being on the same page as the governor and locking horns to some degree.
And I think, let's be clear, you know, I think some of our more maybe cynical listeners will say, well, what something I would point to, which is also that PG&E and other utilities are among the largest campaign contributors in the state. But what's interesting about the conversation, at least in the last year or so since Picker got appointed, is that it seems less about just, you know, doing the bidding of these utilities, and to some extent more about protecting executive power. And so it's almost this struggle that's happening within government, whereas before it was, you know, I think under PV there was this sense a lot more that it was about his relationship with the utilities. And then there's this also broader question of like, what they're doing, because, you know, PV, for all of his faults, his big push was for renewable energy. And I think that there was some sense that like the ends justified the means among folks on the left. So that's a lot.
Well, that's a lot indeed. I'm thinking about Governor Jerry Brown, who is the executive, and the other executives, maybe an executive club of sorts or fraternity. Put in your own inferences here. Let me go back to Mark Toney, though, who's here with us in studio and is head of TURN, the Utility Reform Network. We've been asking listeners for proposals and ideas for reform. Just wonder what you think about this. This is from David. It says, many water and gas utility problems are a result of broken pipes. Gas and water pipes do not last over 100 years. I propose a simple law. Require that every utility replace 1% of their pipes every year. This would significantly reduce a lot of our problems. Currently, utilities don't want to spend money on regular capital projects. This law would get to the root of many of the problems.
The issue that this listener has brought up is one of deferred maintenance. Is a big problem with utility companies in that they don't have a plan to replace pipeline on a regular basis. The other issue that we find with, for instance, PG&E is that they are having trouble finding their records of the pipelines, where they're located, and in some cases, what materials were used to construct them with, which was part of the San Bruno issue. So the PUC does need to do a better job in making sure that the problems are addressed before they become catastrophes. And that's what a lot of the push around safety is about.
Since we have been talking about politics, I wanted to read this email by Benjamin. Before I get to the email about politics, it's actually a website comment. I want to get to this email by Benjamin, who said, to the professor's point, that's Severin Borenstein, who called in and talked about the low salaries for CPUC employees. He says, I can attest that my father worked at the CPUC for 25 years as a PURA 5, highest-ranking analyst right under supervisor. At the end of his career, he was making $80,000 a year. I made more than that after 4 years working for the Southern California Edison, with a grand total of 5 years of work of experience under my belt by then. Another listener, Jim, writes, applying the follow the money mantra, why would the legislature want to bust up the PUC and take away its constitutional protections? How about so that they suddenly have far greater power in those areas and can thereby start attracting a much greater amount of lobbying and donations than they can today? And I raised that before with you, Steve Wiseman, because it's a reality. I mean, our legislators do operate to a great extent by the kind of money that is put.
Well, that's one one reason that, although I can join the spirit of what Assemblyman Gatto is proposing, I agree to, with Mark that it really is a nuclear option. It basically, I mean, you don't want to let the horse out of the barn before you've built the corral. And yet what he wants to do here is to say, all right, let's just blow up the Constitution, get this agency out of there, and then that'll put pressure on the legislature to come up with a better way within a couple of years. Well, legislature has trouble doing that for the very reasons you're stating.
And I think it's important to note that what Gatto's proposing is very vague in that sense, because it's essentially just asking voters to give the legislature permission to split up the CPUC. There's no draft of what that will look like. And so it's sort of saying, trust us. I know, you know, Gatto won't be there. He's termed out. But I think that is where this proposal does get a little squishy and raise questions. I mean, I think that there are certainly areas of the CPUC's authority that you can make a decent argument maybe don't fit in with its broader mandate anymore.
Now, Marisa Lagos is reporter for KQED's California Policies and Government Desk. And I'm going to go. I'm sorry.
Steve, I just wanted to say, in a rational world, the legislature would sit down and come up with a new plan first. Then you go to the ballot.
And I'm going to go to another caller. And we were talking about alternative energy that Michael Peavy was advocating. And here's Harvey from Berkeley, our longtime solar advocate. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Michael. And hello, Marisa, Mark, and Steve. My question is this a utility takedown? I believe the utilities like PG&E are running scared because recently the California Public Utilities voted to save net metering. And at the same time, I think your recent show where the California Coastal Commission, they want to take down Lester, and Lester's trying to preserve our coast, and that'll perhaps open the coast up to drilling oil and fracking for gas, and also PG&E's, it'll slow down the closing of the dangerous Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. So I think this is they're kind of scared, and it's an attack on two fronts at once, at least two fronts. We may see more.
All right, Harvey, I thank you for weighing in. Appreciate hearing from you. We're going to go to another caller, and that's Tom up in Sonoma. Tom, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I think we're just dancing around the real issue. I agree with Ivan and his comments that the real issue here is public ownership. I mean, economic regulation is inherently prone to corruption and influencing the regulators. You know, one of the greatest of California, this goes back a long way, one of the greatest of California novels, The Octopus, is essentially about the corruption of the Public Utilities Commission, or the Railroad Commission, as it was called in those days. But that's what it's about.
That's Frank Norris's novel, but it's really also about the greed of the railroad people and those who are running the railroads. Thank you for that, Tom. Let me go back, actually, to Steve Weissman, who's the public policy guy here. Keep hearing about public ownership, and you say what?
Well, this was something that we wrestled with as a nation in the beginning of the 20th century. We're going to have the public run these utilities, or are we going to have them private, or what? And for better or for worse, the decision was we're going to go with investor-owned utilities primarily. But then, as Franklin Roosevelt said in 1932 when he was running for president, we'll have that municipal utility option out there. It's the birch rod in the cabinet, and the regulated utilities are going to know that if they misbehave or they don't provide efficient service, that the public could still have that option to take things over. There's no doubt about the fact that on a historical basis, the cost of service for municipal utilities is lower. There's several reasons why that makes sense. And it's also true that you can have maybe a closer reflection of the values of the citizens in the way that utilities run if you do it on the local level. So that's an option that's always being considered and pursued. Now the current manifestation of that is not to go to full public ownership, but to have what's referred to as community choice aggregation, where you can have cities and counties actually going out and buying the power that's then delivered by the utility. So it's a step in the direction of public ownership without the whole thing.
And I got to say that the issue of accountability exists, whether it's privately or publicly owned. I do have to note that the Flint water crisis was a municipal agency that made the decision to bring water from the Flint River. So I just want to say that there still has to be accountability no matter who is running the utility system.
Well, let me read another email that's just come in from Robert, who says, I worked in the CPUC Office of Ratepayer Advocates for 14 years and recently retired. The public needs to be involved in any CPUC reform and understand the multiple challenges channels of influence that utilities have. Michael Peavy was a direct conduit. Since he left, the utilities go more indirectly through the governor's office to pressure Picker and other commissioners. In addition, the utilities are huge campaign contributors to the legislators on the utilities, on the utility committees, and occasionally run the commission. So dealing with these power imbalances is critical for any reform. It's sensible.
To both Steve's and that point, the reason I think a lot of communities, including San Francisco, have gone the CCA route instead of full public power was because there was tremendous political pushback, as evidenced by Prop 16 back in, 2010 or so, where PG&E put an unprecedented amount of money into a ballot measure that would have made it easier, you know, for these types just of CCAs to exist. So, you know, it's hard to disentangle how much of that is because it's hard to build structure and how much of it is the politics.
We got seconds here, Marisa. What's next for this Gatto legislative reform proposal?
Well, it's got to get through the legislature. So we look forward to some hearings.
All right. On that note, I thank all of you, Marisa Lagos, KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, Mark Tony of Turn, and Steve Weisman, who's with the Public Policy Department at Berkeley and a former administrative law judge for the CPUC. And thank you, our listeners. We would not be here without you. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Judy Campbell, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. We get online support from Natalie Emanijan, and our interns are Eli Wolf and Ida Mojadan. Our senior editor, Dan Zoll. Our executive producer, Joanne Wallace. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.